This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org. Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for the Pulitzer Prize-winning Advocate, is with us. And he is at the legislature. Things are picking up today, front page, about dueling budgets between the Attorney General and the Governor. What's going on here, Mark Ballard?
The budgets are primarily, the Republicans say that we don't have as much money as the governor says, and that's what that's basically boiling down to. They'll be fighting over what services can be funded versus the idea that we may not have enough money down the road, so we ought to be careful about funding services on a recurring basis. That will put us back to where we were last year at this time.
Well, the big sexy issue of the week at the Capitol is sports betting. It's cleared the first legislative hurdle, going, as you say, past the first furlong, getting out of the Senate committee, and perhaps surprising, the Senate leader for the Democrats, Karen Carter Peterson, went before the panel. That was a riveting moment.
It was. She has talked about her own addiction to gambling, and it basically makes the argument that gambling, as opposed to alcohol and drugs, is a much more quiet disease. You can hide it easier because, you know, there's no changes in personality and you get yourself in deeper. And she's mostly concerned about not so much the sports betting in the casinos, but the idea, and there's a major push ahead to expand the sports betting to using cell phones, so that would allow you to place your bets, at home, in your underwear while watching the football game, mm-hmm. and you could update your bets as you went on, and that just makes it too easy, she said, for people that have a problem with it. She's also looking for more money from these sports betting revenues to be going towards programs that help compulsive gambling.
Producer Matt Doyle has a sampling of Karen Carter Peterson's testimony. Here it is.
No one around this Capitol would have ever known that Karen, if you didn't see me in a casino, has a real problem. Nobody would have known because it's shameful, it's embarrassing, it's the highest suicide rate of any addiction. You know, it's something to be liberated when you have no secrets anymore. It's a dangerous thing.
She made a persuasive case, and is it such that this is a momentum that can't be stopped? The state needs the money, wants the money, and it's there if it's passed. What do you think, Mark?
Well, the sponsor of the bill, Danny Martini, is trying to keep it as spare as possible so that it gets passed and that we can kind of keep up with Mississippi and Arkansas. So he's not going to allow too many of these attachments to it because he doesn't want it to be seeming like an expansion of gambling. It already has a significant opposition to it. He's arguing that if we don't do it now, then we're going to lose a significant portion of our gaming revenues to Mississippi and Arkansas and Oklahoma. So whether it gets on, that's going to be the fun thing to watch over the next few weeks.
Now, another story involving so-called sinning. Lawmakers are deliberating whether to boost the smoking age in our state to 21. And what happened yesterday?
Well, that bill finally got through the Health and Welfare Committee, which is, by the way, chaired by the sponsor of the legislation. It's going to have significant opposition to it, but it's also a movement that's taking place in legislatures around the country. So I think it's got a pretty good chance.
And a listener asks, before we dispense with gambling measures, as Tyler Bridges reports in The Advocate today, Harrah's, the extension that the casino giant in New Orleans is seeking, got an extension. Anyway, it looks like it's going to do well in the House. It comes down to what happens in the Senate. How's it looking for Harrah's?
Well, I think by virtue of the fact that it has the Senate president as well as the House speaker on the legislation, I think it's probably going to pass. Those are two powerful politicians, and so they carry a lot of weight. What's going on, as you'll recall, it kind of just breezed through and then popped up in the final days of the session last year when people started questioning, well, wait a minute, are we getting enough money for giving them essentially a free license for 30 years or however many years it was? Now, there's still questions of do we have enough money coming from Harris, but it's in between the amounts that the deal is worth, according to a special panel that analysts that looked at it very carefully. So my guess is that it'll go through. It was Senate President Ilerio who kind of stopped it last year, and he's on board with it this year.
Well, it amounts to a monopoly, and the bill would require Harris to make an upfront payment, with the state receiving $17.5 million and New Orleans $7.5 million, and the minimum payment by Harris would rise from $60 million a year to $65 million in 2022 and then increase up to 2% every year thereafter. So the state gets lots of money from Harris, and it looks like this time around the momentum is there to make it happen. Another story that doesn't involve what's going on at the Capitol, but it involves dollars and cents. LSU hired Scott Woodward to be its new athletic director, and he's going to get almost $8 million over the next 6 years, Mark Ballard, to serve as the head of the athletic ship at LSU. Scott Woodward, no stranger to LSU. He worked here with Mark Emmert. He's a graduate of the school, Catholic High graduate in Baton Rouge. He comes back home heroically, and then he's got some hard work to do.
Well, he did a lot of good stuff at the University of Washington as their athletic director, kind of got their sports program, you know, headed in the right direction, and then went to A&M where he made several significant hires over there and raised a good deal of money. Now, Texas is a different story than Louisiana, and we'll see how well he does in raising money in Louisiana, which we don't break open our checkbooks quite as much as they do across the border. And so we'll see that. And but everything we've heard so far is that, you know, what a great hire this was.
Now, another listener on another Dollars and Cents matter notes that last week we talked about those four LSU employees who got fired from high-paying jobs. They were getting between $140,000 and $270,000 a year, but they never registered their vehicles in Louisiana and didn't have driver's licenses. And now they are being represented by former state senator Larry Bankston. This is an interesting thing. Bankston's a good lawyer, but it would seem that this might be a tough case.
Well, it might be, but I mean, basically what they are, and LSU has not denied this, what they are saying is that, one, this may have been a state law, but they were never informed about it. And had they been informed about it, they wouldn't actually have taken the job. And then when they were informed about it, this before it became public, that LSU, hoping to avoid publicity, tried to come up with a deal where they could look like they, you know, resigned, but actually they just continued on under a different type of contract. And then when it did become public, LSU just pulled back that offer. And so it kind of basically said, you know, clean out your desk, get out of here, you're out of here. And they're saying, well, we were treated unfairly all the way down the road. And their main argument, and they may have some legs on this, I'm not a lawyer, but their main argument is that it was LSU's fault for not setting up any type of procedures to guarantee that these laws were actually being followed. And so, therefore, they shouldn't be held responsible for it.
877-217-5757. Another listener notes that John Chavis, the former defensive coordinator, the chief at LSU, sued LSU over a contract that was revised, a contract he had signed without his consent, and yet Chavis still did not win in court. It's very hard to win a case against Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I don't know the last time somebody has won. I know some district court victories, but not victories on appeal. LSU almost always prevails. I wonder why, Mark Ballard.
Well, I would take question with that in some of these bigger cases that, I mean, like that one, I don't know all the facts of it, but you take a look at the sexual harassment type of cases that have come up. LSU almost universally loses those cases, and so I mean, I would say that
don't they usually settle them?
They'll usually settle those cases, you know, but they have actually gone to court and lost. So
okay, 877-217-5757. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. And Mr. Ballard, when are we going to see your tax returns? Actually, my serious question is about when is ALEC working our legislature this year, and how can we find out, like, who gives our lawmakers money?
I think he's talking about the group ALEC that was involved a lot during the Jindal years. Are they still down at
right.
the Capitol?
They are still out, and they're still a lot of the legislation that you're seeing from the conservative side are basically coming from the ALEC library, and they're based on proposals that ALEC is making, and so they kind of take these bills and form them into something that will work in Louisiana, and we see that a lot.
And I think Phil's first question, at least I hope it was a bit whimsical, but there was an editorial in the New York Times of late that says that perhaps a good idea would be to have every U.S. citizen's tax returns available for public consumption.
Well, I don't care. I mean, you know, I mean, I find it kind of annoying that the president won't do it, and you know, and that a lot of these big time politicians that make a lot more money than Mark Ballard does.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate, is with us. Matt Doyle's producing, and your number's 877-217-5757. And you could send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. And you were talking, Mark, about tax returns, and quite often, privately, some of these members of the Louisiana delegation will say they don't really like Trump, but they like his policies. These are the Republicans we're talking about. But they don't like him. But yet when it comes to that vote that comes up every now and then, and Democrats are pressing it to release the president's tax returns, they always vote with President Trump. I wonder why.
Well, I pretty much think they'll vote for him all the time. I mean, that's right now, it seems like that Mr. Scalise and the rest of the Republican congressional delegation support the president almost whatever he does. Or I have not yet to see where they don't support him. So,
well, Governor John Bel Edwards is taking initiative and says he wants to debate three times. And this is kind of unusual. He notes that the last two incumbent governors who ran for reelection did not debate their opponents when they were running. Now, that, by the way, is not true of Mike Foster. He did debate William Jefferson and Phil Price in 99, but Bobby Jindal did not in 2011. He did not debate his opponents, and he had token opposition. But Governor Edwards says he wants to debate Ralph Abraham and Eddie Rasponi. What do you think?
I wasn't here when this happened, but did Governor Foster, when he ran for re-election, do any debates?
Yes, he did.
Oh, he did.
That was the re-election. Remember, he defeated Cleo Fields first go around, and then in the re-election quest, he did debate Bill Jefferson and Phil Price. I remember on LPB, and Mike Foster did face his opponents. Bobby Jindal chose not to do that.
Right. The general thinking on this is that, you know, if you're an incumbent and you're ahead, then why go about doing the debate? It's important to point out that all the polls show that that the governor has very significant high popularity ratings, but they're not above 50%. And so, I mean, that could be part of it. Also, he's, you know, that it's a way to get the campaign going. As you have pointed out, that it's not really that exciting so far. And maybe this is a way to, you know, kind of bring it back and allow him to speak you know, one-on-one against Abraham, I'm sorry, and Rasponi.
Okay.
But it's a gamble. It's a gamble, I think.
Sabash at the Country Club of Louisiana says, could your esteemed guest enlighten citizens like me? What exactly does a center or middle of the road candidate mean?
Well, I don't know his political leanings, but my guess is that anything I say is going to be taken, you know, as bad or worse. But I think middle of the road candidates, in my mind, are ones that are willing to, you know, work at willing to compromise and willing to, you know, take a little bit of one side and a little bit of the other side and come up with some sort of way to move an issue forward. That seems to be what, at least my definition of middle of the road is.
Bill,
pragmatic.
Okay. Bill Huey writes, please ask Mark Ballard what he thinks was the potential litigation mentioned by an LSU Board of Supervisors member prior to the secret meeting to fire Joe Oliva last week. Were they concerned that Joe would sue LSU for wrongful dismissal?
Well, interestingly enough, I've asked that question a number of times of LSU, and they were supposed to put out a letter that says, you know, these are the things that we're looking at, but they never did. I mean, they didn't follow the open records law on this, so we don't really know. You know, but it could have been the what we talked about earlier, where the four IT analysts were potentially suing, because that is a potential litigation that's going to be raised against LSU. I mean, it could have been anything. One thing we do know was that any discussion of Joe Oliva leaving was not on any of the agendas.
Larry Bankston just sent an email agreeing with you that Larry Bankston, has been successful in previous litigation against Louisiana State University. So it does happen on occasion, but LSU is a formidable foe, and I think even Larry Bankston would acknowledge that.
Yeah, they are formidable. That is true. It won't be easy, but they have been beaten.
Okay. 4-3 party line vote yesterday. The Louisiana Senate Committee endorsed the Equal Rights Amendment. This has cropped back up. Voting yes, Karen Carter Peterson, Wesley Bishop, Troy Carter, Arthur Morell, excuse me, not Arthur.
JP. His son.
Voting against, Jack Donahue, Jim Fannin, and Mike Walsworth. I doubt that this is going to go the distance, but it is interesting that we're talking about this once again.
Yeah, I find it interesting. We would be the 38th and final state that gets this passed, that gets the ERA passed on a national level. However, I'm not making any bets on this. I'm thinking there's a good possibility of it getting through the Senate, but then it gets over to the House and it'll grind to a halt there. Would be my handicapping of that.
Well, it's hard enough to even get equal pay passed, and that is a long shot. I would think the Equal Rights Amendment.
Or minimum wage.
$7.25, that's where it should be, according to many. We had Gene Mills on the show yesterday, head of the Family Forum, and he says that the government shouldn't get involved in that. Now, the government, according to Gene, should get involved in a lot of other things, like stopping sports betting and stopping abortion, stopping this, stopping that. But they should not get involved in raising or establishing any minimum wage. He shares, I think, the same sentiment as Lauren Scott, that the best policy in the world would be no minimum wage.
Yeah. They do, and that seems to be what the Republican Party stands for.
Well, the market often is a good dictator of policy, but I think you and I know that if there were no minimum wage, we'd have people making even less than $7.25 an hour.
Well, I mean, I saw that a lot in Texas, where they would take the illegal immigrants and pay them far less than minimum wage, and they were happy to get it, but... Yeah, I mean, I think that's true.
But the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry is heavily involved in this. And my guess is that most of the people who are members of LABI pay their employees far more than $7.25 an hour. Why are they taking such a hard stand on this?
I think that it has always been that the business community has always been against expanding minimum wage, and this is they're just taking the stance that has always been taken. It's and I think it's no more different than that. I mean, they're saying it does not. They don't like the idea of government telling them what they have to pay, and they're also a concern about if they raise the minimum wage, then they're going to also have to raise wages throughout the rest of their company as well. And so I think those are the arguments that are raised.
And Governor John Bel Edwards, this is the fourth try for him, and it's probably the fourth time the legislature will shut him down.
Probably so. That is a windmill that he's willing to keep fighting.
Well, and he's got polls on his side, too. It's not like he's going out on the limb either on this, but I've seen him in the studio that we're in right now, and he speaks with passion on this. He believes this is ridiculous that Arkansas is at $11 an hour and we're at $7.25.
And the arguments that would be raised is that, you know, by giving people more money, then they would have more money to put into the system, and that would actually kind of help out the economy. But it is all what ends up happening is that these families end up having two, three, four jobs because the minimum wage jobs to make enough money to make ends meet, which they cannot do with a single minimum wage job.
And another listener notes that waitresses don't even make minimum wage.
This is true, but they do make tips. We can argue all day as to whether that's a good thing or not. In Europe, they do get paid a minimum wage, and they also are required, you know, have a service fee on it. There's a big argument as to whether, you know, whether waitresses should be paid a living wage and, mm-hmm. and not have to rely on tips.
Well, Mark Ballard, it's always good to talk with you. Thanks for going into overtime today. Another listener notes that the waitresses at we've talked about this, the top casino in Baton Rouge, they're weighed every month. So they not only are not paid at top levels, although the tips at a casino are probably pretty good, but they have to weigh in to keep their jobs. Mark Ballard, thank God journalists don't have to do that.
Yeah, anybody wants to tip me, I'm open to it.
All right. Thank you, my friend. See you soon.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye. And let's close with Jumbo, Al Hurt, born November 7, 1922, New Orleans. He died there April 27, 1999. This was his biggest hit. Al Hurt, Alois Maxwell Hurt, in his prime, about 50 years ago.